Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Tuesday, August 14th, 2001. In the Creekside Room this morning is John Stabb. Today's session number is STJ-2001-01, and it's titled Claiming the Wholeness of a Balanced Life. Let's listen in.
Claiming wholeness. Now, how many were not here yesterday? So just sort of by way of introduction, kind of what brings me to this has been being called to a new congregation. Up until middle of January, I was serving at Calvary Lutheran Church in Philadelphia, and was called to serve at St. Francis Lutheran in San Francisco. And anytime you move, the routine sort of gets discombobulated, and you're sort of open to new things, particularly when it comes to the liturgy. And as I mentioned yesterday, one of the sort of idiosyncrasies at St. Francis is that they have they dismiss each communion table. Rather than have continuous communion, as most churches do now, 12 or 14 folks come up to the altar, and then after they've all communed, then there's a dismissal given, kind of the way it was in the old days. And the dismissal that has become customary at St. Francis goes like this: May the body and blood of Christ preserve you unto life everlasting. Live in forgiveness. Claim your wholeness, go in peace. And that claim your wholeness just really kind of resonated with me. I'd never heard that said before. And my colleague Phyllis Zilhart, she's not sure where she came up with that, but she just sort of put that together. She's a real poet and wordsmith, and had been using that for about 8 years. And so that's sort of become our motto, our slogan, if you would, put up a little newsletter. So now it says, as our sort of our branding statement, it says, gay and straight together, living in forgiveness, claiming our wholeness. And I'm sort of working with that concept, trying to discover ways personally that I can claim wholeness for myself. And it's hard because so much of the world asks us to compartmentalize ourselves. You see this particularly in dealings with the medical community. You know, you see a specialist for this, a specialist for that. There's nobody that is really dealing with you as a whole person. And wouldn't it be nice if that were the case? If before surgery, the doctor would pray with you and deal with your emotional state before you went into surgery. But that's sort of the chaplain's job, you know, to go in there and do that. So that's sort of the concept, and
I grew up with that, where each table was dismissed. You know,
yeah.
That's kind of like that, but now there's too many, everybody's in a hurry, and
yeah.
People, I guess.
Yep,
I think
you know, people like to have their, I mean, that's sort of holy ground. They're mm-hmm. kneeling at the rail.
Kind of special.
Yeah, and they like to have some time there, you know, not just be fed and leave, mm-hmm. But to have some time there for prepared just to experience the holiness of that place, and then to be given a dismissal like that. Mm-hmm. I guess it's sort of old fashioned, but I like it.
Our church still does it that way.
At least, yeah.
We actually have the front railing and the two sides.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of weird. And I like it that way, but I was helping to serve me a couple weeks ago. And by the time I got back to the front rail, the pastor had forgotten or been busy, forgotten to dismiss the people at the front rail.
Yeah.
They were still standing, but nobody said anything. Nobody got up, so I just waited, but it was a nice moment of silence.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things that you do it, people assume that the way they do things are sort of the standard way, you know. And another mistake I made is there are a few steps coming up to the altar rail, and one gal, Millie Ferrari, she comes to the front, sits in the front pew, to have communion brought to her, which is, I think, standard in most churches. So after everyone else has communed, I went down and communed her, and then went back to clean up the altar, and got in trouble for that because I didn't say the words of dismissal to Millie.
Yeah.
It's just so important for folks to hear that, you know. Live in forgiveness, claim your wholeness, go in peace. And I'd never done that before, communing, disabled folks who couldn't get up to the altar. But it just really, resonates with a lot of people. And it's something that I've been kind of struggling with, and particularly with the topic for today, which is claiming wholeness in the area of the rhythm of rest and work, Sabbath keeping, finding time during every day for some grounding, some quiet time. I first have to let you know, if you don't already, that for any parish pastor to presume to talk about Sabbath keeping and the rhythm of work and rest is absolutely preposterous. Parish pastors are notorious workaholics. And I'm probably the worst of them all. My wife reminded me of that several times as I was preparing for this. An example of that, we had many opportunities over the last 25 years to come up to Holden Village to just kind of relax and be here and enjoy the mountains. Somehow never managed to fit that into our schedules. But when I was asked to come here and teach, well, that's different. So somehow it's this is a worthwhile use of my time because I'm accomplishing something, and I'm making contacts. And somehow this is productive. Whereas all the times I could have come here and just be here and relax, I thought about it and figured it would be a nice thing to do, but it just never happened. But
The gentleman yesterday said that Luther said you can't work your way into grace.
But yeah, absolutely. And for a Lutheran workaholic, it's just, totally incongruous. But it's true. And parish pastors are just terrible about taking a day off. And it's the system is hard. I remember when I was doing my internship, I was working at a social service agency in Washington, D.C., and doing an internship at a parish. On Friday, everybody would say, have a nice weekend. And I would say, what's a weekend? It's hard to find Sabbath time when you work on Sundays. And something that I've been able to do every so often and get into a routine and then fall out of it. And I have not been successful in resting and Sabbath keeping on a regular basis. One of the things I hope to learn this morning is to learn from you about some Sabbath, some devotional practices that have worked for you, that you've been able to sustain on a regular basis. First time I went to Jerusalem, I was on a group tour. We arrived at our hotel on Friday night, late on Friday night. Hadn't had a chance to see much of the city. First thing Saturday morning, I got out to run because we were going to be in the hotel for a couple of days there, and I like to get out and jog some in the morning. I got out on the street, and I was amazed that there was hardly any traffic. It was just like a ghost town. A few people walking, a bus, a car, every so often, but the place was almost deserted. And then it finally dawned on me, it's the Sabbath. How remarkable that street scene was apparent the next day on Sunday when I went out again to jog, and I could, I nearly got run over. It was horns honking and just commerce and traffic and buses and cars and traffic jams. It would just show how seriously folks in Jerusalem take the Sabbath. And I really think we have a lot to learn from our Jewish brothers and sisters, just in the way they treasure that time. One of the odd things there is in I guess throughout Israel, and it's not, there are many secular Jews there who are not particularly religious, but because the religious parties have such political power, they ensure that the laws support the keeping of the Sabbath, and they have in all the hotels there what they call Sabbath elevators that stop at every floor, and only on the Sabbath time, which is from sunset Friday until sunset on Saturday, so that Orthodox Jews don't have to push a button for their floor, because switching on a light is considered to be work. You know, pushing a number 5 on the elevator is something that for Jews who take the commandment to desist from work very seriously, they can't do that. That would be breaking the Sabbath for them. So you get on the elevator, and you know you may be the only one on there. In the Hilton in Tel Aviv, and you're on the 10th floor, and you get on, and 1, 2, 3, the doors open and close. It's just striking for me to see what lengths folks go to really observe the Sabbath. I spent some sabbatical time in Iceland a couple years ago, and it's kind of similar there on Sunday. Iceland is 95% Lutheran. It's the most Lutheran country in the world. There is no, they don't have separation of church and state. The church is a part of the government and a part of the whole life of the people. And Sunday is the Sabbath, and stores are closed. And the main event is worship. 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon is the standard worship hour in Iceland. And I kind of wondered about that until I realized that during the winter months, the sun doesn't rise until 12:30 sometimes. So that's, you know, that's daylight year round. And that is the main event. Shopping centers are closed. The town library is closed. The culture really supports Sabbath keeping in a way that I think our culture used to. I remember growing up in New York, stores were closed on Sunday. The only store that was open was the Jewish deli, and they were closed on Saturday. And then I remember there was a Walgreens drugstore, sort of one of the new, back before that, drugstores just sold drugs and things like that. This is sort of one of the new drugstores, and the drug part was open, but they had the place where you could buy beer and pretzels and other things like that. It was sort of roped off. They weren't allowed to sell that stuff on Sunday. That was a long time ago, and our culture not only doesn't support Sabbath keeping, but it has worked to destroy the whole concept of it. You know, stores, a lot of folks they can't make it to Sunday morning worship because they got to work. Supermarkets are open. Stores, they used to wait until noon to open. Now, you know, Sunday's just another day. So I think it's a real challenge for people of faith to think about Sabbath keeping in a culture that totally doesn't support it. And I think ours is American culture is probably worse than any place. It was just before we left civilization. There was a thing on the TV about a law that they had passed in France to set a 35-hour work week, and this is going to be. This is sort of, it had been mandatory in certain industries, but now it was being extended to small businesses and things like that. And this was had been pushed through by trades unions and passed by Parliament. And they were celebrating this. Everybody was going to work a 35-hour week. And I think in most European countries, I know in Germany, it's comedy. It's 6 weeks vacation. And folks take that seriously, but America has a whole different ethic that I think is dysfunctional and dangerous. son has some friends that work on Wall Street for investment banks. And it's 15, 18-hour days is common. 7 days a week, really, really, really hard work. But the payoff is they get a big bonus at the end of the year. I mean, huge year-end bonus, for a kid right out of college, $100,000 bonus at the end of the year. And the assumption is that time, and that's a good deal. The assumption is time is money, and it's always a good trade-off to trade your time for more money. And that sort of seems to be a part of our ethic. Let me check. I'd like to give a pop quiz. Remember that? Wasn't that always fun in school? You come into school, first period, English class or something like that, and I'm just kind of having a good time, and the teacher says, okay, we have a pop quiz. This is, if you have a piece of paper, and if you don't have a piece of paper, just kind of keep mental notes here. There are 12 questions, and each question has an A, B, or a C. So, and at the end, I'll see how folks tallied on these, A, B, or C. And this is a quiz about pacing. What is your pace quotient? And for a context, these are sort of lifestyle questions. So don't think of your life here. This isn't your real life. Holden Village is not your real life. Think about your real life back wherever you were before you came here, or when you decided, hey, I need to get away from whatever it was you needed to get away from to come to home. Kind of use that as your context. And I know we have a lot of retired folks here, so. So think of kind of as your context, what your life was like that before you entered the bliss of your retirement years. Okay, how many retirees retired?
And yet, retired folks are sometimes just as busy as anybody else.
Yeah.
Because they volunteer for so much.
But yeah. Exactly. Okay. Question one. You are behind a driver who has not noticed that the light has turned green. How do you respond? Okay, A, give the person a moment to notice the light has changed. And you have to answer this honestly now. Okay, B, immediately blow your horn. Or C, lean on your horn and express your irritation verbally.
What if you're the driver there behind?
That's the next question.
I never honk, but I do yell. Come on! Okay, so that's A, B, or C. Okay, question two. You are in a slow-moving grocery line. Okay, we talked about this. You are in a slow-moving grocery line with time to spare. What are you most likely to do? A, engage in conversation with someone. B, look repeatedly at the person at the register to see how fast things are going. Or C, become irritated.
Or D, read the National Enquirer.
Or option P would be to pray, right? Okay, three. In conversing with others, how often do you interrupt them in mid-sentence? Yeah. And I should add to this, or complete other people's sentences for them. I've been willing to do that. It would never take time to kind of get to the point. I want to help them along. Okay, so in conversing, how often do you interrupt them in mid-sentence or complete their sentences? A, not very often. B, some of the time. C, very often. Four. how much time during the day do you devote to prayer, pondering, meditation, and or just taking it easy? A, at least an hour. B, at least 30 minutes. C, less than 30 minutes. So just quiet time, prayer time, devotional time each day. Okay, question number 5. Someone or something has interrupted your planned activity. Select the word that best describes your typical gut feeling. A, interested in this interruption. B, disturbed. Or C, aggravated. Remember when my wife was serving a parish down in San Diego, she came home at the end of the day and I go, how'd your day go? How was it? And she said, oh, I didn't get anything done. I had all these interruptions. And we talked about it, and it was the interruptions that were the ministry. It was the people in crisis or kids that had questions. The interruptions were the substance of the ministry, and we kind of laughed about that because she indeed got quite a bit done that day because of the responding to the interruptions. Okay, question 6. Which word best characterizes your mood at the beginning of an average day? Can you get up and say, hello world, good morning. Are you A, excited, B, burdened, or C, depressed? And then question 7, which word best describes your emotional state at the end of an average day? A, contented, B, fatigued, C, stressed. Question 8, when you see a rainbow, how long does it hold your attention? A, many minutes, B, several seconds, or C, just a second? Oh, rainbow, cool. 9, when was the last time you paid serious attention to a child? A, today, B, within the past few days, or C, I can't remember. 10, how often do you find joy in your work? Or if you're retired, how often did you find joy in your work? Maybe that's one reason you retired, because you didn't. Okay, but A, frequently, B, often enough, or C, you gotta be kidding. Okay, question number 11. How often do you hurry one activity to get to the next activity? A, not often, B, regularly, or C, all the time? Okay, question 12. How often do you move fast when there is no particular reason to do so? A, never, B, sometimes, C, I confess that this quiz is taking a little bit too much time. now let me just take a poll here. How many have mostly C's on their answers? How many?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Probably
you admit. You have
mostly C's. I had 7.
Ooh, good for you.
I only have 1 A.
You only have
No,
one.
Excuse me, 2 A's and the rest B's.
Okay. How many had mostly B's? Well, this is scary. How many had mostly A's? The advice here is if you answered A for the majority of the questions, chances are you are not living at a savoring pace. Which is important. This quiz, by the way, is from a recent book called Rest in the Storm. And it's written by a seminary professor at Ann Arbor Newton, a Baptist pastor, African-American, who writes mainly for clergy, and sort of encouraging us to do more in the way of self-care. And as an example, his paradigm for this is Jesus sleeping in the back of the boat in the middle of a storm. And I'm sure you recall that story. The storm comes up, the disciples are all anxious, and there's Jesus, retired, separating himself from the disciples, taking a snooze. And his advice is we need to follow Jesus' example a lot more than we do. I highly, particularly for clergy or for other caregivers, the so-called helping professions, particularly prone to workaholism and burnout, but I highly recommend that.
So how do you categorize B and C?
Okay, yeah. Okay. B is, if you answer B most of the time, paying attention to your pace will be helpful. And if you answer C most of the time, paying attention to your pace should become a major priority. I don't know.
What was A's?
Chances are you're not living at a savoring pace. B, paying better attention to your pace will be helpful to you in terms of a lifestyle. And if you answer C most of the time, basically you're doing okay. But he says paying attention to pace should still be a priority for you. But this is
That's backwards.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. You're right. Okay. You're right. That was backwards. Yeah. I was rushing through this to get on. to get out to the next thing. You're absolutely right. Yeah. C is bad. A is good. B is okay. I'm just curious. What
B is?
What is?
For those of you who had a lot of A's, I'm just curious, I'm not sure how to get this out, which are the questions that really triggered you? You said, yeah, well, that's me. Was it the standing in the line or the green line or
the
what?
Job.
Hmm?
The job.
The job?
There was a question about how much we liked the job.
I actually had some in every category. I mean, I think most of this probably did, but I had kind of somewhat of a balance between good and, mm-hmm. I mean, a few more. I had like six A's, but I did have four C's.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of
pretty much a matter of patience, isn't it?
Yeah, patience. Yeah.
You learn that when you teach school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I am not a patient person, and one of the places I have learned to be patient is working with developmentally disabled adults who just really live in the moment, live in the present, and they're in no hurry. And working with them and sort of getting into their pace of life just kind of helps relax me. It slows me down. It's fun, and just sort of joke a little bit and just help draw a picture of things like that. I've learned so much working with those folks. And another thing that helps slow me down is I start taking writing lessons in San Francisco. For the first couple lessons, it was just sort of getting familiar with the horse to tack it up and put on the bridle and the saddle and lead the horse around. And you have to, you can't be twitty and jumpy with a horse because then they'll get jumpy. You have to kind of get into their rhythm. And it's amazing how in trying to work with a horse, it's sort of forced me to slow down. But patience comes hard to me. I admire people that have a lot of it. Yeah.
It seems many of the answers, the A answers, have to do with letting go of situations that you have no control over. Mm-hmm. Standing in line, being behind a driver that's not moving. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a book book by written by James Gleick called Faster, and it's been on the bestseller list. It was for a while, but it's sort of about how everything in our society is getting faster, and the pace of movement is increasing too. And you know, cell phones and email and all that. He said that the two places that are the hardest to deal with, and industrial psychologists kind of work on this because they know people get impatient and nervous. That the two toughest places to deal with are waiting for toast. Industrial designers are working on how to make the toast pop faster because people get and the other one is waiting for the elevator door to close. And so people would get frustrated. So they added the closed door button. They didn't used to have that, but it was sort of a new thing, so that people could feel like they had some control instead of having to just wait there, you know, for the door to close. Okay, I've got to do something. I've got to push the button. You know? But he also talked about how particularly in the early 50s, when all sorts of labor-saving devices were coming out, you know, the all-electric kitchen automation and stuff like that, and the promise of all these new devices was that it would free you up for more time to just enjoy life, you know, to have leisure time. Whereas in fact, it hasn't been the case. It just gives you more stuff, you know, to want. So people have to work like two jobs to buy all this stuff that saves them time, so that they can enjoy the time that they don't have. Again, going back to the myth of the time is money, and it's always a good trade-off to trade time for more money, and the more money you get, the better. And if that's the American way. We need to wake up from the American dream.
I was probably overthinking some of the questions, but some of them were somewhat contextual. For instance, you know, how long would you look at a rainbow? The only time I ever see rainbows is when I'm on I-5 driving.
Yes.
So I would love to spend 8 minutes, but all the poor victims around me would appreciate a bunch of, oh, yeah, rainbow. Yeah. Okay. And then also standing in line at a grocery store, for me it depends on whether I had to pay for parking or not.
Right.
If I didn't have to pay for parking, I would love to have that family of curtain climbers in front of me, out of the way, in front of me. Mm-hmm. but if I had to pay for parking, suddenly my groceries cost $5 more. Mm-hmm. And then also interruptions. If they interrupt something that I could reschedule, it's not a problem. But if they interrupt a TV show that I'm really in the middle of, mm-hmm. that I could never capture that moment again, then, you know, then it's different. So you could be a C or an A in each of these.
Right, yeah, it depends on the situation. Yeah. Any other responses to the quiz? Did you learn anything new about yourself?
No, I did. That one where where you stopped at the light behind the impatient, behind the driver. What I do is for me it was A and B, because I'll wait and hope that the driver notices, then I'll honk.
Yeah.
Depends on what city you're in.
Yes.
The road rage is something. I lived in Philadelphia for 8.5 years, and it just, I understand drivers in Boston are even worse, but I pulled out about 7-Eleven or something like that, and I sort of cut this guy off. I pulled out in front of this guy in a Volkswagen, and he went berserk. He honk, 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 and then he drove around me to get in front of me, you know, and shaking his fist at me, and I noticed he has a kid in the back seat, you know, in a car seat. And he was just enraged that I had pulled out in front of him. And I guess I didn't see him. I don't think it was a particularly dangerous situation, but I cut him off, you know. And
there's a good article on the last Reader's Digest, I think it was often, on road rage, how this 18-wheeler pushed a little car up the hill. It was just such... on account of road rage, it was horrible.
Yeah,
just cut him off, I guess, a little bit.
There was a case in San Francisco that was I forget exactly whether it was an accident or some sort of altercation on the road. And one driver took the dog out of the other driver's car.
And tossed
it off the bridge or something like that.
Just throw
it into the traffic and the dog was killed.
And we'll be serving 3 years in jail.
But I mean, what kind of country do we live in where people get so stressed? And I'm sure it was just accumulated stress of life that put him in that state.
That knee-jerk response, you don't think, you just do.
Yeah, and you do that when you're tired, when you're stressed, you don't take time to know what's going on here.
You're in a hurry.
When you've had too many lattes that afternoon, you know, you're tired.
I just wanted to say that I didn't have a pencil and paper, but I know that if I had taken that quiz when I was working full-time, it would have been totally different than now, since I retired. And I don't have that pressure, so I could see what that job had done to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because it was an all-consuming thing. Mm-hmm. So I just think, to me, that is one of the keys as to how to manage the work life so it doesn't kill you.
Yeah, and you shouldn't have to defer, you know, your peace and rest time till after you're... after you retire. There ought to be a way to incorporate that. I'd like to read a quote from this this book by Wayne Muller called Sabbath. I had asked the bookstore to order some of these, but I got in way too late, I'm sure. But Wayne is a Sabbath keeper himself, and he's a friend, and I think he's right on here. Let me just read this. It's kind of a long thing, but let me read the whole thing. In the relentless busyness of modern life, we have lost the rhythm between work and rest. All life requires a rhythm of rest. There is a rhythm in our waking activity and the body's need for sleep. There is a rhythm in the way day dissolves into night and night into morning. There is a rhythm in the active growth of spring and summer as they are quieted by the necessary dormancy of fall and winter. There is a tidal rhythm, a deep, eternal conversation between the land and the great sea. In our bodies, the heart perceptibly rests after each life-giving beat. The lungs rest between the exhale and the inhale. We have lost this essential rhythm. Our culture invariably supposes that action and accomplishment are better than rest, that doing something, anything, is better than doing nothing. Because of our desire to succeed, to meet these ever-growing expectations, we do not rest. Because we do not rest, we lose our way. We miss the compass points that would show us where to go. We bypass the nourishment that would give us succor. We miss the quiet that would give us wisdom. We miss the joy and love born of effortless delight. Poisoned by this hypnotic belief that good things come only through increasing determination and tireless effort, we can never truly rest. And for want of rest, our lives are in danger. In our drive for success, we are seduced by the promises of more money, more recognition, more satisfaction, more love, more information, more influence, more possessions, more security. Even when our intentions are noble and our efforts sincere, even when we dedicate our lives in the service of others, the corrosive pressure of frantic overactivity can nonetheless cause suffering in ourselves and others. A quote, successful life has become a violent enterprise. And then what he says about Sabbath. Sabbath is more than the absence of work. It is not just a day off when we catch up on television or errands. It is the presence of something that arises when we consecrate a period of time to listen to what is most deeply beautiful, nourishing, or true. It is time consecrated with our attention, our mindfulness, honoring those quiet forces of grace or spirit that sustain and heal us. Sabbath is not a time for us to rest up so that we can work again. It's not a utilitarian thing. It's holy time. We also read something from this is a book is over 50, about 50 years old, but still a classic on the Sabbath by Rabbi Abraham Joseph Heschel, and he talks about the holiness of Sabbath for his own faith.
May I interrupt your thought?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I've seen so many people, it's like that you do have a Sabbath and weekend, but they wear part of their leisure as they do at their job.
Absolutely.
And when I was employed, we had a thing where we could work, you know, 4 9-hour days or something and get a fifth day off. And most people took it Friday and Monday, and I did for a while, but then I started charging through my leisure weekend, and I switched and I started taking it off my day off in the middle of the week on Wednesday. And everybody thought it was nuts. But then I used that Wednesday more like a Sabbath rather than a charged up leisure time activity where I was working harder than I was at work.
Yeah. The people who do get weekends, you know, say, "How was your weekend?" And if people do projects, you know, they re-roof the garage, or they didn't really use that as sacred holy time.
When you were talking about the laws in France being changed to limit it, work to 30 hours a week, I thought, well, that happens in America. It just gives people a chance to have two full-time jobs. That's what would happen.
Yeah. I saw a thing on TV about that. They're talking with some American wives of French Christian, and it was on one of the morning shows, but they were just sort of talking how much more graceful life in France is, and it's okay to, you know, and when people don't grab lunch there, they dine and they take an hour and a half for lunch, and they were just sort of beaming and gloating at how fortunate they were to have married Frenchmen, and just a much more gracious sort of lifestyle.
You know, before the time runs out, and get into that, I hope you'll save some time, because you mentioned it yourself that before we're done, you know, asking folks here about some of the things that they found helpful, it would be interesting, I think.
And I don't have a watch on, so what time is it now?
I've got 11:30.
11:30? 27. Have I been yapping for 45 minutes? Stuff that I don't know anything about? Let me just a Sabbath went on a Sabbath retreat that Wayne Muller led last year, and this was at a time I wasn't taking a day off. I would just work 7 days a week, but I sort of compensated for that. So I took a spring and fall Sabbath at the Kirkridge Retreat Center, which is up in the Poconos, and it was just really good. Good Sabbath time, so I sort of justify overworking the rest of the time, and that worked. That worked, and I really look forward to that. And but I'm not there anymore. I need to find a substitute for that. But one of the things that Wayne had us do, and it was just remarkable, was that we sort of gathered and lit candles, and he sort of set the set the stage for discussion of Sabbath time, and just to give us an opportunity to experience it. He set us out to sort of walk through the woods, and our assignment was to just walk around aimlessly. and to just, if our eye, if you notice something, to spend some time, as much time as we felt we needed, and then move on. Just delight in, it was a beautiful time of the year, it was in springtime, and just sort of delight in creation and just sort of wander around. And it was such a freeing thing. I can't remember when I had done that before. When I hike, it's, you know, I'm heart light now. I'm going to get there faster than everybody else. As a destination, a sense of sort of conquest. But just to... And he, you know, very directed with that. Just wander around aimlessly. And we did. It was kind of neat to see the group there. Everybody just sort of, you know, we sort of bump into each other and not talk, you know, and just notice things and butterflies and, oh, isn't that, you know. And we didn't have to report about it afterwards either, but just sort of our experience of having that kind of sacred time to do nothing and to delight in doing nothing. And it was great. Yeah.
I find that with the labyrinth, if I were left to my own self, I'd be jogging.
Yeah, yeah.
And skipping over and trying to get through it. But if you really walk it, it's, it takes a lot of patience.
Yeah, and to walk it very, very deliberately, and that's a real centering experience, and it kind of a waste of time, you know, which, this is a waste of time. Yes, that's exactly the sort of Sabbath kind of activity that you ought to take.
I think that the terminology is real key there. I mean, you know, we have pastimes, you know, playing poker and what, I guess TV is a pastime.
Yeah.
We don't even call those waste of time, but those would be closer to maybe waste of time. I don't know. They're pastimes.
Yeah.
But walking the labyrinth, I don't know. I'd say it was a waste of time, but it's sort of suspending time.
Yeah, yeah.
So that you can be somewhere else, or, you know, calm down,
yeah,
or whatever else. So,
yeah.
You know, our terminology is sort of, I've always had a problem with that, because, you know, some people find TV very therapeutic, but it's kind of like, what's happened?
Yeah.
And quite often, nothing has happened it doesn't provide any positive qualities.
Yeah,
it's,
there's no inner journey, there's no...
Right. There's no eye movement like reading a book.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess I would like to hear from folks who have found ways to make good use of their Sabbath time, of Sunday. Sunday is the Christian Sabbath because it is the day of resurrection. That's why we Sabbath on Sunday instead of Saturday. And also folks who have a daily, regular devotional life that really nourishes them, that provides the sort of rest, the sort of connectedness with God, the sort of centering that really, really nourishes you. What has worked for you?
If I could amend that too, that it would be interesting, you know, some folks that have lots of time, and there are some folks that have little time, you know, folks that are working maybe 8 hours a day, you have to work.
Mm-hmm.
And so as people make comments, it'd be interesting to know what context these things are being developed, because, you know, you talked about jog. I mean, you know, you don't find time, but here you are in Jerusalem. You have time to jog, so apparently you make exercise a priority and you make it happen.
Yeah, and let me just say it. When I was in Philadelphia, that became a real devotional time for me. And it was a place I would always go in Pennypack Park. I had my routine. First thing in the morning, I would drive to, it was only about a mile away, would run about a mile in, a mile back, and I prayed during that time, and I learned to pray aloud. I'd never prayed aloud before. I discovered my mother does that. And so I would sort of jog and spend that whole time in prayer or chanting and start the day that way. And it was marvelous. It was just, you know, I felt so much energy and peace to begin the day. And I'm struggling. I'm not doing that anymore in San Francisco. I haven't found my road to Emmaus yet. But that's sort of what I came to call that, my road to Emmaus, because it was where I came to see Jesus. It's where I, in the process of that, I discovered my call to go to San Francisco, and it was marvelous. But I was doing that. That was like a precious maybe 4 months that I had that routine, and I don't have that anymore. That really worked well for
like
me.
Like 2 miles jog, maybe something like that?
So it wasn't like a training.
5 or 6 miles, yeah.
Yeah, it was a peaceful, it wasn't a hard drive and run. It was relaxing, it was prayer time, it was centering time, it was time with God, and that worked for me. And I'd still be doing that if I was in Philadelphia. But if I, you know, disrupting, you know, moving, you know, disrupting the schedule makes that hard for me. It seems like it's really important to settle into a ritual, you know, that you do every day, whether you feel like it or not. You know, say this is my prayer time, and I haven't discovered that again. Get up and go to work, and in a rush all day. What has worked for other folks?
Well, I like, among other things, to try to get sit in the tub with some water, of course, and say once a week go take a bath with the lights off and maybe some bath stuff, and that isn't necessarily prayer time. Maybe sometimes I'll take my radio in and listen to a little music.
Yeah.
Or maybe sometimes a book, or just lie in the tub and with the water and space out for a while.
Yeah, and that sort of has taken on a ritual. Is there a certain time of the week that you do that?
Usually either Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah. So there's a sort of sacred time set aside. Do you ever light candles?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the only way I can see anything.
Yeah. So you've really sort of carved that time out. So that's good. What works for others?
Probably in the car. Sometimes if I'm in a car driving, it might stop. That's the time for prayer.
Mm-hmm. Do you pray silently or aloud?
Silently. Uh-huh. But I find that's very relaxing.
I'd encourage you to try praying aloud as you do that. All the drivers think you're nuts. Talk to yourself. But yeah, I never prayed aloud until last year, and it's different, and it's just to actually take those thoughts. You know, God knows your thoughts anyway, but just to form the words, I found to be really neat and helpful. Yeah.
You think that praying aloud? I was thinking. First of all. What I'll often do is, my husband's a parish pastor as well, and so...
Is he a workaholic?
No. I mean, well, he works hard, but we're doing okay. Well, I think we're kind of pretty balanced, I think. We're okay. But it's tough to find times to do things. And so what we do is, well, our children have gotten old enough now. Our oldest is old enough to be with the youngers, and they can... The only time, and then we have kids, we have one high school, one middle school, and one elementary, so we have three PTAs, too, you know, and stuff like that. So there are things happening. But what we do is we get up early in the morning, because we figured out that was really the only time we could consistently exercise, because really, you know, it was like, and we don't mind, it's not a chore, it's a pleasant thing we look forward to. I mean, yes, there are mornings that we're too tired to do this, but we make it pretty regularly, but we'll get up early and we'll get to there's a little family club that we belong to.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get there at 5 and do our, you know, lift weights or exercise at that time. And this is not a drudgery thing for us. And I used to run a lot, which I don't do now, but I find myself going back to the practice of what I did when I ran. I'll go on the stair stepper and that 30 minutes is gone. Because my mind is just, I'm just, you know, it's just...
I travel all over the place, you know, in that time. It's very relaxing. Mm-hmm. And then...
It's sort of a contemplative time.
Yeah, yeah. And when I used to run like 6 miles a day. But I would pray at that time too, but I wouldn't pray the entire time. I mean, I would pray, and then my mind would go off on some other thought or solve a problem in my head or make a list, you know, in my head or whatever. And then pretty soon I'd come back and I might pray again, or I might think about somebody else, or it would just kind of be mental relaxation time. But my question too for you is, in the praying aloud, I find myself praying in the car, but I mostly it's silent. I might sing in the car, and that'll be out loud. But I had a thought on your praying out loud. I'm wondering if the difference or the thing that you like about that. I'm wondering if that it. I think it's easier to get distracted or kind of lose concentration if you're praying silently. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious about your comment about praying aloud. I'm wondering if it's easier to stay focused and to not lose. If I go on this mental deal, it's kind of, I can start out praying and then I'm thinking about something else. I'm like, when did I stop praying? Mm-hmm. You know? So I'm wondering if you talk out loud, if you're more likely to stay in a conversation.
Maybe so. I mean, there's more. You know, you're more focused, I think, because you're actually looking for the words.
Physical
effort. You're focused on forming the words that come from the thoughts. And sometimes I find that the words are. I'm surprised at the words that come out. They're different than the thought. You know. Yeah. Angry?
I just was thinking, taking care of myself lying on the floor, thinking about when the best time in my life has been that I've had a practice of regular meditation and prayer. And I realized it was when I hit with the 5 years I was nursing babies. Mm-hmm. And it's a privilege that women have that men don't have. My husband always used to say that he didn't think he could bear it all the time I spent nursing. But it's a time when there's a little bit of, you know, the baby will twirl their finger in your hair, or they'll pat your cheek, or they'll... And you're sort of immersed in the beauty of this child who's so pink and happy with the nursing. But then the baby kind of spaces out into their space, and you space out into your space, mm-hmm. and you have a mutuality, but also you have lots of... I worked all the time my babies were little, and I worked part-time, and I would come home at the end of the day, and, you know, people would be wanting supper, and there would be all these possible activities. But I had to nurse the baby.
Mm-hmm. so you were in fact doing something useful.
Yeah.
So that sort of gave you permission to just kind of
and it's enforced let down, and it's just a nice little activity. And you can pray over the baby and put the sign of the cross on the baby's forehead. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's so much cherishing that goes on that's mutual, because the baby just adores you. And so it's a very nourishing kind of time, and it's a wonderful time for prayer.
There's a rhythm to that, and that's what I really liked about what you read there, is you focused on the rhythm. Just as there's a rhythm to feeding the baby, you can't fight that rhythm. And I think we tend to fight the rhythms in the world today instead of finding those rhythms and working with them. Mm-hmm. And I see that walking to the bus stop every day. I go past 4 stoplights and I have to walk across. I push a button to get the walk sign. Mm-hmm. I know the rhythms of the light. I know that there's a left turn, so I have to wait here and I have to do this. So I can push the button once. And others come up and jam the button 10 times because it's not
and then look and see that, you know, there's a break in the traffic. Like, that's your boss anyway. Uh-huh. Yeah.
People around.
Yeah.
I've done some just silent meditation. I have a little office that's really quiet in my house, and I have friends who do a lot of meditation, and they just sit quietly for maybe even an hour. Now, I've never made it an hour. Yeah. But
do you have a particular spot that you...
I have one seat on this sofa in my little office, mm-hmm. and I just sit there and close my eyes and just try not to think about a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't lay it on the say you fall. But I have friends that do that, and they're just very spiritual people. And of course, I've taken yoga classes a little bit. I don't do it anymore. But I mean, these people can just sit there and meditate for a long, long time, and they do feel real centered. You can just see that they have a lot of peace about them. I don't do it as much as I should or I really want to, but I get distracted along the way. But that, it does help get me some.
Well, I think there's a session, either it's tonight or tomorrow night, on centering prayer, Thomas Keating, which is that whole concept of make yourself available to God.
Yeah.
And that means taking everything out of your mind, even prayer, you know, just being there, which is a form.
Okay. I'm impatient. How much time do we have?
It's 11:44.
I'd like to close. Yeah, I am the worst person to teach a class on rest and, you know. One of the things I found helpful is chanting, which is the Eastern practice, monastic practice, but very different from singing the hymn. The hymn has, you know, verse 1, verse 2, verse 3, beginning, middle, and end. A chant just sort of goes on and on and on. And I just found that very rough. I like to close by teaching you a chant that I learned from Walter Wing. It comes from the Indian Native American tradition. Oh, great spirit, earth, wind, sky, and sea, you are inside and all around. Please join me with that, and we'll just sing it. If you have to go, just leave. We'll just sing it as long as you feel like singing it. Okay? Oh, great spirit, earth, wind, sky, and sea, you are inside and all around. Sky and sea, you are inside and all around me. Oh, great spirit, earth, wind, sky and sea, you are inside and all around. Sky and sea, you are inside and all around me. Oh, great spirit, earth, wind, sky and sea, you are inside. Earth, wind, sky, and sea.